There's one. Set for stun.
Three guys sitting in a dark room that smells like bad cucumbers.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Inconceivable!
Now featuring 11 listeners.
This is me.
You slimy scumbag, get on your face and give me 25.
This is the Unique Geek.
And welcome to 50 Days of Dragon Con. I tricked myself up. 50 Days of Dragon Con, the podcast that we're all spaced out at this point. Joining me tonight, as always, is the green alien to think, I don't know.
I'm the gray alien to your reptilian alien.
Well, I was going to say the green alien to my Captain Kirk, but then that was just going to go someplace absolutely wrong. Lee,
you still said it, so it's going to still go someplace wrong.
Lee is here. Hey, Lee.
Hi. Hi. So if you listened to last night, what we did last night with the podcasting director, that was great and had a lot of fun. I was really in space then. So yeah, I was a little manic last night, right at that last one. But I felt great. I didn't hurt.
No, you're fine. And I think you're fine.
I was ridiculously in the atmosphere, but you know, that's okay. Cause I've always wanted to be in the atmosphere. You know, John, you and I, we missed going to the moon, right?
I tried, but they would not let me go.
TV.
Yes. Oh, Mr.
I know,
that thing.
I keep
oh,
trying
yes.
to sneak in and they keep telling me, no, 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 we really don't need just, you know, nice little people that can do a lot of, operations management and great financials to go on the space shuttle. At some point they're going to need me. So I keep reminding myself, but there was that. But we did get to see the space shuttle, the whole of the space shuttle. And we have lots of things like that. And I think what's really amazing is that it's, again, not because of the Space Force, but other reasons coming around that people are like, you know, space is kind of cool. Those meteorites have lots of minerals. And at some point, maybe we want to go live on another planet. I don't know, like Mars or something like that. And, you know, how's that going to happen? But, you know, I've always wondered if that could really be talked about in a way that could have a panel or something like that.
That would be difficult.
What do you think?
It sounds like there should be a track at Dragon Con for that very thing. Seems really weird that there isn't, though. Wait, there is.
We called somebody, and her name's Rain, and she's the director of the Space Track, which I think has a much longer name. But hi, Rain!
Hi, Rain.
Hello, guys.
Yeah, so what is he?
What a great introduction, and that segue, Lee, was just amazing.
Yeah, it was weird how...
You are a very sweet, sweet woman.
Flawless okay. It was. So what is the actual track title?
We do our best to get there. We swear.
The actual track is just Space Track.
Oh, okay.
Many years ago, many, many years ago, when I first started with Dragon Con, way back in 2003... at that point, it was known as the Space and Science Track,
yes.
And it was on the verge of going away. It was,
what?
There was nobody to take over it. And a friend of mine who, is no longer with Dragon Con, although he still shows up all the time, called Johnny X. He was asked with about 6 weeks before Con in 2003, if he would take over the track. And if he didn't, they were going to cancel it. So he did, and he turned to me and said, oh, by the way, you're going to be my second. And I looked at him and said, your second what? Because I had heard of Dragon Con, but had never been. And we put on Space and Science Track that year with like a little bit of 6 weeks to go. We were lucky if we had 25 people in the room, and those were all the people, you know, who had been walking in and out of Space Track for years. But we grew it. By 2007, we had grown the track big enough that they gave us two rooms, a space room and a science room. And then in 2008, they officially split the tracks and they said, which one do you want? And I said, space. So here I am all these years later, director of Space Track.
Wow. Cool. So, but you guys fall under the, basically the normal sciences, I guess you'd be, the hard science, the you guys all live in like a little pocket over there, don't you?
Yeah, we call ourselves, well, I think of it, we call ourselves the reality tracks.
Ah, and reality tracks.
Space and science and skeptics and electronic frontiers. I throw podcasting and robotics and makers into that, although they're no longer right in that area with all of us.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and then, oh, since we're on that topic, whereabouts is your track located?
I am at the Hilton, room 212 and 213.
And so that's when you come off the Habit Trail, you just kind of go off to the right, correct?
Actually, it used to be off to the right when that's where Skeptics is. If you go off to the left now.
Oh, really? I didn't realize I didn't realize they put you across the hall.
If you go all the way down to the end of the hallway, my rooms are on the right side. Science rooms are on the left side. And then the room just in front of science, when you first walk into the hallway, is EFF.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right, cool. So
all of you know where to find me.
But you're not just inside of your track room, right? You've got some stuff going on outside.
I do. Something that we have had since 2007, we have had live solar astronomy, which is phenomenal. And we have this amazing man, Stephen Ramsden. He has his own nonprofit charity. It was known as the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy Project. And he has now moved into something that is more STEAM, not STEM, STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts. And I forgot what the M is.
Mathematics.
Yes, mathematics. Thank you. And it's called Sunlit, I believe. But anyway, he has an amazing, amazing setup of telescopes that he used for solar viewing. His previous incarnation of his nonprofit went into schools all over the Southeast and for free and would just bring solar astronomy to kids all over the place. And he was always giving away all sorts of goodies and stuff. But years ago, we talked him into coming to DragonCon. And so we have had this solar astronomy set up since 2007, where anybody from DragonCon can come out this year. It is on the third floor of the Hilton where the pool and tennis courts used to be.
Mm.
They built up that great big ballroom right below it. And so it actually, they took out the pools and tennis courts there. But there is an area to the right of where that build is that is wide open to the sunshine. And so we're back there. And that's where it was for many, 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 many years. It moved last year because the build was going on. And so we've moved back. And if there's sunshine going on between Friday and Monday, he will be there. And of course, I have a volunteer, Ben Jenkins, who helps him out. And Ben is phenomenal as well. The two of them, they're great. They really are. And it's so cool. You never know what the sun's going to do at any different time. It could be nothing. And then all of a sudden you'll see this prominence come out of the side of the sun. And it, you know, to us, it looks like this little bitty thing, but in reality, it's millions of miles long.
Mm-hmm.
So I encourage everybody to go.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I also have.
I've done it and it's awesome.
Yeah, I made it out there last year and it was really, really cool. Are there any talks on the solar probe that NASA launched?
Not specifically the Parker.
Yeah.
I have a talk this year. I have two different talks because I had so much programming this year that I literally could not. I could have three rooms and I couldn't have done it all. so I sort of conglomerated a bunch of them together and came up with panels of numerous people talking about different things. And one of them is called What's Going On in the Solar System. And in that, there are something like 19 different missions that are active going on in the solar system right now. And, you know, they're going to try and touch on all of them. And one of them is the launch of the Parker Solar Probe. I will do more on that next year when we have more to talk. Right now, it's just launched. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, hi, this is really cool. We launched. You know, we talked about it a little bit last year when we talked about the solar eclipse that was so phenomenal last year. So when it gets to be more prominent where there is more actually to talk about, I'll bring it up again.
Oh, okay, cool. Now, do you have other big events outside of your room this year?
Well, I always have something that I am very proud of. We do a NASA Kids Workshop for all the youngins out there who, you know, want to learn a little bit of science that is more space related in its own way. Sam Ortega out of the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville has done this for me, I think, since 2013. He has a number of my other guests involved with it. You know, David Hewitt, who's from out there as well. I always have, you know, one of my people there someplace. But Sam also always brings like a hovercraft, you know, a little hover thing that he and his son built. And they take the kids up and down the hallway and, you know, and they always have other things that go on in there. David Hewitt brings like what he calls a briefcase rocket. I don't quite understand what it is, but it's really, really cool. I've seen it. But that's always really great, too. That is Sunday at 2:30 p.m. I think it's in rooms 309 to 313 or 12 or something like that. It's right above where we are in Hilton. So those are my two outside events, outside the room events. I have some really, really cool stuff going on in the room, though, this year. I'm starting off the track this year, and I got really lucky with this because it turned out that the Crystal Ball Room happened to be available at 10 a.m. on a Friday, which is astonishing. But I appropriated it.
No, it's not. That's like the very early. That's early.
It is, but in previous years, it's been used. So
that is true, because sometimes, yeah, there are lots. We do try to do things as we do try to run and kick it all off on that Friday. Yes, we do.
Yeah. So
because some people like John kept saying there were 5 days of Dragon Con and then, you know, something happened.
Oh, thanks, my God. John. Yeah. Please don't say that.
Yeah, well, it's true now.
Well, not as far as my track is concerned. We're doing load in and room put together on Thursday. So. But anyway, so Friday, 10 a.m. in the Crystal Ballroom. 10 years ago this year, Richard Garriott, who is the son of shuttle astronaut Owen Garriott, was the sixth person to launch.
And Lord British, right?
And Lord, the gaming world knows him as Lord British. So yes, we can throw that in there as well. Unfortunately, I don't know anything about the gaming, so I just think of him on the space side. But he was the sixth private citizen to launch into space and go up to the ISS. And years ago, he did a talk for us on what that was like, you know, at the time. And if you were there, it was really, really cool, because he gave, to that point, the most explicit explanation of how do you go to the bathroom in space that I had ever heard.
Oh my.
You know, more and more you hear about it now. I've heard some of the NASA astronauts talk about it too, but at that point it was just like the audience was just like roaring with laughter. It was hysterical. So he's going to do a 10-year retrospective and also sort of look at where we are now and, you know, when will private citizens ever be able to get into space again? So that's going to take off.
Yeah, that would be good to know.
Yeah, and Leah's anxiously waiting for that, right?
And is it going to be a ridiculous?
For a long time, it's going to be ridiculously expensive.
Well, then I'm going to have to sell a kidney. Okay. Well, now I know. Now I know I have to sell a kidney, so I'll just go plan on it. And just do
yeah,
it.
Start saving them up.
You're going to science-y, so if I sell a kidney, do I not pee as much?
No.
It doesn't work that way?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, you can survive with one kidney. But,
yes, you can. I know that because people do donate them. That's true.
Yes, they do. And it's wonderful. But of course, if your one remaining kidney ever breaks down, you're in a heap of trouble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you will turn all sorts of various different shades of colors and go through dialysis and all of that horrible stuff.
Okay.
But it is a wonderfully generous thing that people do.
Yes.
To help somebody else live.
So yeah. You have some other big talks, too, besides Richard Garriott.
I do. Next year is the 50th anniversary of the landing on the moon. So, and there
the
are
supposed already- landing on the moon. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I know they landed on the moon.
You would not believe how many people on Netflix watched that movie. There's a movie about it that says we didn't. And I just always want to go to those people and go, why are you watching this? But I'm trying to be good.
you know, Buzz Aldrin is a hero in many, many ways, you know.
And he'll punch you.
Beyond walking on the moon himself. But everybody that I know within the space community, and even those without it, you know, not in, directly involved in any way, still think that the most wonderful thing that he has ever done was to punch out the guy who kept hounding him and hounding him and hounding him, saying, "You didn't go into the moon. You didn't walk on the moon." And Aldrin just punched him.
I think my husband watched that little, the GIF of it for like 100 times in a row or something. He was so excited about it.
Oh yeah. You can find it online, and it is amazing. And I found out, because there are people on the track, some of the guests on the track who know him very well, that this guy had been following him around for years, you know, finding out wherever he was going to be and being there and just screaming and yelling. And he was, you know, being very provocative. And Aldrin finally said, "Fine," you know, and I just, if you do watch it, it is so much fun to watch, at least from my point of view. Not that I ever want to condone any type of violence, but, you know, I don't think he hurt him that badly. It was just a shock that he finally reacted. So anyway, this is, and this year it is 50th anniversary.
Oh, wait, I was going to say one, I'm sorry, I was trying to unmute you. The one other thing too about Aldrin punching him in the face is that he did knock him back. He knocked him down,
yes.
I think.
Yes, he did knock him back.
At the time when Aldrin did this, I want to say he was 80-ish.
No, so, I think he was a little younger than that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It happened
was like 10 years ago.
I think it was a little bit more than 10 years ago, but
okay.
I mean, he was not young. This did not happen like right after he came back from the moon. So
yeah.
It was,
no offense meant to Buzz Aldrin, because he's awesome. But he was in his AARP time. I mean, he was getting those benefits at that point when he did it, which is still, which also makes it kind of doubly cool.
Yes, very much so. So anyway, there is a gentleman who is coming this year, who straight out of Penn State, he graduated and he went to work at Cape Canaveral and in SysOps engineering. And he was there through the entire Apollo program. So this will be, you know, he's going to come and give a presentation on that. And this will be the first time that we've actually had somebody who was directly involved in the Apollo program. So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing that. His name is Jerry Trakeman. He's doing he'll be on a couple of other panels as well. But that's the one that I'm just like, oh boy. It's Sunday at 11:30 a.m. and it's called Remembering Mankind's Greatest Adventure, the Apollo Lunar Landings. So I think that's going to be really cool. I'm looking forward to that a lot.
And also, he's systems ops people. These are the people that, like, if we think about Apollo 13, these are the ones that got him down.
Mm-hmm. He was.
Those are what was it? What is the term? Oh, God, it's
unsung heroes.
Yes.
Well, it is unsung heroes, but it's also a steely-eyed missile man. These are the steely-eyed missile man above and beyond the astronaut.
Yeah, you know, he even though he was at Canaveral, they were, you know, Johnson and Canaveral were all working on the problem of getting the guys from Apollo 13 back. Mm-hmm. So,
because they were both like, both of them would be doing testing on, well, did this work for you? Did this work for you? They were doing it all the time. Because there was a very short time frame they did all that, which is also what we forget.
Yeah, it really was. It was very amazing. So, as I said, I'm really looking forward to that. And he is involved in a couple of other things. We've got a talk on sort of international cooperation on space activities, which we're not directly talking about Space Force this year. We talked about it a little bit last year, simply because, again, like I was talking about with the Parker probe, right now it's just talk. Mm-hmm. We have tons and tons of people talking about it. The president spouts about it. But it is nothing until Congress does something with it. So when and if that happens, we'll talk about it again. But I, you know, we wouldn't have anything more to say this year than we did last year when we talked about it.
Right.
So I'm not talking about that directly. But I did want to, you know, there is a lot of people talking about what's going on all over the world. And there are launches going on this year, you know, from Russia, from China, from India. Almost every country in the world that, you know, has any money available is trying to get into space. And we already have a lot of cooperation amongst many different countries around the world. You know, we operate the space station with Russia. You know, we may not get along with Russia in any other way, but in space. And, you know, if you've read Scott Kelly's book, Endurance, about his year up in space, you know, he talks about the great relationship that they have. And in a lot of ways, they, you know, they are interdependent. So we're doing a talk this year on space and international cooperation, a national imperative, with Les Johnson and Nick Eftimiades, Jerry Trakeman again, and Richard Garriott. So I think that's going to be really cool. And then another one that is going to be really different. It's called The Necessary Evolution of the Human Interstellar Civilization. And that's a mouthful.
I was going to say, can you say that three times fast?
I barely got it out one time, even slow. I'm involved with a group called the Tennessee Valley Interstellar Workshop, and that's separate from DragonCon. But it is one of these groups, like the 100-Year Starship that Mae Jemison is involved with, that are looking way into the future and trying to figure out the very beginnings. You know, what kind of steps need to be taken now, which you can build on later, which can then later be built on even more, that way into the future will make the human race an interstellar civilization. You know, it's not like we can just say, hey, we're going to go. You know, we can't get to Mars quite yet. We haven't been back to the moon since 1971. So it's a big deal. And I've had some talks on that previously, but this year I'm taking a different approach. If and when humans do get out to become an interstellar civilization, I believe, and I think a lot of people do, that humans will evolve to make space travel easier for them. One of the things that people think about when they're, you know, it's like if something happens to Earth and we have the capability, you know, we all go into sort of like a space arc, you know, people think about it that way, or, you know, our own little version of a Dyson sphere and we're off to, you know, the moon or of another planet or another star system. But if after a number of generations being in space, I think that humans will actually evolve in what way, I don't quite know, because I don't have the scientific background for it, but I'm bringing in three people who possibly do. And they'll be talking about that this year. And that's Sunday at 4 p.m. So I think those are some of the big, big things that I think a lot of people, you know, will have an interest in there. I got, you know me, I always have a ton of different things that I'm wild about. But in general, those are some of the big ones. We'll be doing an update on our gravitational wave talks. I'm going to give myself and my people a big pat on the back here. I had early, not warning, but hints from some of my astronomers who deal with black holes that there was going to be big news about gravitational waves. So we got together and we did, I think, three different talks. But the final one, in every different way you could do it without stating it as being an absolute fact, We announced that there had been a merger of two neutron stars, which created gravitational waves. Up to that point, it had been something theoretical. And there was a lot of work that went into making sure that what they thought had happened had actually happened. It happened in August before Con last year. They didn't make the official announcement about it until October, but we did.
Wow. That's cool. So
it was very, very cool. So, and Roy Kilgard, who is, he does my late night live astronomy, because that's the other thing. Of course, I always have live astronomy going on at night from either Chile, and I think we're going to do some from Los Palmas this year. And if the Kitt Peak is available, sometimes we go to Kitt Peak as well. But William Keel and Roy Kilgard do that for me. And Dr. Kilgard actually did some 3D printing. And he made me a pair of earrings that have two little black dots right next to each other that represent the two neutron stars, and then spirals around it representing the gravitational waves emanating from it. And he gave those to me last year, which was very nice.
That's
I have some
so cool.
People. I do. I have really, really great people who, you know, who come in and talk on my track. And, you know, that's one of the most amazing things, even for me. You know, I am not a scientist in any way, shape or form. I don't even play one. I don't proclaim in any way that I am. But I have all of these spectacular people, you know, from the different NASA facilities, from universities, from commercial space groups who come and, you know, my track is not just free form talking. I mean, I have some talks on that, but almost every single one of them are people who are putting together PowerPoint presentations, you know, with sometimes little movies embedded in them and, you know, the whole bit. And so you can come and you actually learn from people who know exactly what they're talking about, because in most cases they're working on it.
That is super cool. Yeah, you guys always have some really credentialed guests.
I mean, very much so.
And I know that probably a lot of them are, some of them are guests, some of them are listed as pros or whatever in DragonCon. But I mean, when we talk pros, we're talking pros for your guys' track.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was early on when Space Track sort of separated out, and even before when it was still Space and Science Track, that was something that I used to have to work harder with DragonCon initially to explain. My audiences are ridiculously smart.
Mm-hmm.
years ago, I don't remember even exactly what the talk was, but one person who was giving it actually, you know, looked out in the audience and said, how many people in the room are involved, you know, in the space community, either, you know, through defense or whatever. And it was like 3/4 of the audience raised their hands.
That's crazy.
That was scary. Wow. That was really scary.
Scary? that there were that many people from the government? Is that what it was?
Well, no, it was scary because it made me realize that I had to be really accurate and my guests had to know what they're talking about, because people in the audience knew.
Right.
If they were wrong, they would know. You know, they may not know every single thing, but they had access to lots of information, you know, and if we're talking about rockets taking off and we're talking about it wrong, you know, there are people who work in the rocket industry in my audience.
Literal rocket scientists.
Yeah. So I do, you know, I am a rocket scientist, and, or, you know, that's exactly what they are. They can all wear that, or most of them can wear that shirt. So it was over a period of a couple of years where I would have to really push and say, no, I can't just have 9 guests to do my track, because I can't have fans on my track.
Right.
You know, DragonCon is a fan-based operation, and right. I understand that. And it is run by all of us who are fans. But on my track, I can't just pull somebody, you know, who says, oh, you know, I don't know anything really about this, but I love it. And, you know, somebody like me, mm-hmm. I would never sit in on one of my own talks. I don't care what it is. I had an offer to join a panel on something that was happening here in Atlanta after DragonCon. And it was a professional thing that was being done. And I was very honored that they even talked to me about it. But I was like, I can't do that. I am not a scientist. I am not a space scientist. And I don't want to say something by accident that would make that, you know, your group that is putting this on look bad. You know, so I'm very, very careful in my track. You know, I try and do things that are fun. But I don't do, hey, let's look at, you know, the difference between real space and, you know, sci-fi space. The sci-fi track does that, you know, the sci-fi.
Right. Lit.
That's what they're there for. They do it. They do it wonderfully. And people love to go and they, you know, have all the debates and it's excellent. I don't need to repeat that on my track, nope. You know, so it some people, you know, might say, oh, your track is so boring. And to a lot of people, it might be. But to people who are really interested in this stuff, they feel that they can come here and learn and have something accurate being told to them. And it's also, for me, a way that I try to keep the track professional enough that I can keep going for bigger and bigger people within the space community. mm-hmm. you know, that wherever they work at, they can go to their head of, you know, whether it's a university or a commercial space group or whatever, and say, yes, this is Dragon Con, which is a popular culture convention, but look at SpaceTrack, look at their talks over the years, look at who has been there. This is something that, you know, will not embarrass us in any way, shape, or form. And to me, that's very, very, very important.
That's super cool. And you guys, well, you guys have done a great job over the years. Yes, Lee, sorry.
No, it's okay. I was just saying that, but that's just it. I think it's so important that we do have these very sciencey things, because again, in Dragon Con, there's so many people with so many different things. We have the engineers and the scientists and all of that who also are fans. And then we have fans who are like, I don't know a lot about space, but I'd love to learn actual science about it. So you've got everything. And I think that's really, and then you can go and talk about, well, this is why the Expanse did this in their way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the sci-fi lit or in American sci-fi or wherever you're going to go for the fandom discussions. And so you've got them both. It's both sides. It's the same coin. It's the different sides, and you got them both. It's awesome.
And I think it's important.
It's not a straight coin. There's not just one side.
Yeah, I think it's important to have both sides of it. I just remembered another talk that I wanted to mention.
Certainly.
The Kepler probe was the space telescope type that was sent out in 2009 to hunt for exoplanets. And it was looking at one big patch of space, and it would look at the stars and see and look for any type of dimming of the light, even something that none of us would ever be able to see. You know, it could see an infinitesimal dimming, and that would say, you know, something is transiting in front of the star, hopefully a planet. And it would have to go, I think they did it, it had to go by three times before they would say they thought it was definitely a planet. Anyway, one of the planets or one of the stars that Kepler looked at, when, you know, it looked at so much that they're still going back and looking at the information and saying, okay, is this real? Can we actually find planets or find this star and see what's there? So one of those stars, an astronomer started looking at, and she noticed that it had this very strange amount of dimming and brightening, much more so than had ever been seen at any other star. And it was so frequent, and it was variable. You know, sometimes you'd get just a little bit of dimming, and sometimes it would dim for days and then just go right back. And so there were, you know, people all over the place in every different pocket of the community sort of went nutso. You know, is it a Dyson sphere? Is there, you know, could that be a sign of civilization? You know, are aliens are out there, or, you know, it's comets that are racing into the planet, you know, into the star. Nobody knew. And there was one astronomer who really made this a focus of her research, so much so that they now call the star Tabby's star. And her name is Tabitha, and I hope I pronounce this rightly, Boyajian. Tabitha, if I said that wrong, I'm so sorry if you hear this.
You can't do any worse than John. It's okay.
I am horrible at names.
Anyway, she will actually be with us this year to talk about Tabby's star and what is really going on there. They've still got all over the world, they're still doing this, that if they notice anywhere in the, you know, any telescope that happens to be watching, if they notice a dimming at all, they send out alerts all over the world, and, you know, telescopes all over the world will start focusing and watching it. And they're still trying to figure out exactly what it is. But she's going to fill us all in. And I think she's doing that Friday night or Saturday night. Yes, Friday night at 8:30, Solving the Mystery of Tabby's Star. So didn't want to forget that one.
Well, cool. Are there any other panels you want to talk about before we move on to our game?
Let me just talk about some people.
Okay.
I mean,
they're going to
talk about these things as well. But besides Mr. Trakeman, who is coming this year, who is new, and Tabitha, for the first time, I have two people that are very involved in with Hubble and with the different space telescopes. Ken Carpenter is with Goddard, and he actually works on the Hubble project, which is phenomenal. We've been talking about Hubble since we first started. And we've got, you know, we've Dr. Kiel usually is the one who talks about that. And he's actually used the Hubble. You know, that's what I'm saying. I have some really great people who do this for me. But this will be the first time that we have somebody who is actually a part of the project itself. And he'll be doing a couple of different talks, but he will be talking about 25 plus years of Hubble. And then I have Steph LaMassa, who is with the Space Science and Telescope Institute, I believe is the full name of it. And she'll be doing a couple of talks with Dr. Kiel as well. Besides the stuff that the Space Science Telescope Institute does, they sort of watch over all of the stuff that goes on in space. You know, they, Goddard and them sort of manage the Hubble together along with some of the other space telescopes that have gone up. Her specialty is large size black holes. And people call black holes with flavors. You know, there are the medium, the smalls, the super large, you know, depending, they base that on how big, you know, how much bigger than the sun is it? The sun is massive, more massive than we can even realize, you know, and you think, okay, our sun is bigger than we can truly comprehend. And yet there are stars and black holes and everything that are millions of times the mass of our sun, which is, again, absolutely mind-boggling. But she'll be talking about that with Dr. Kiel. Sorry, Dr. Kilgard. I always get the two Ks mixed up on black holes and you know, just some of the other things, talking about radio telescopes, which we've got the woman who calls herself the noisy astronomer, Nicole Gugliucci, on that as well. So who else is coming this year that is amazing? Trina Ray will be back. All my JPL people that my audiences absolutely adore. There'll be a wrap-up of Cassini. You know, we all cried 15 days after DragonCon ended. I was up at like 5:30 in the morning just, you know, watching the images from JPL as they watched Cassini.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and watch for the signal from Cassini to die. And we did. We cried. I have to say, I was very, very honored, though. I do challenge coins every year for my guests, and then I sell a bunch of them for charity. And last year, I did one for Voyager and one on Cassini. And Trina Ray thought they were fabulous, and she asked me for all of the extra ones that I had, and for both Voyager and Cassini, and she gave them to the top people in both of those programs.
Oh, really?
So
oh, that's
the project
cool.
director of Cassini oh, and the so project cool. director of Voyager has my challenge coins on their project, on those projects. So I was blown away that she wanted to do that. And I was just very, very honored to say, yes, here, please, you know, take what I have. So my own little way, you know, I had my own little contribution.
That is cool. That is super cool. And only at DragonCon. That would only happen.
And only at DragonCon. Yeah. You just, you know, DragonCon as a whole, whether it's, you know, my space track or whether it's Filk track or mm-hmm. you know, Lee's X track or whatever it is, you just find fascinating people. And you can wander the hallways.
Yes, you do.
You do. You can wander the hallways at any time of the day or night and come across just an unreal group of people who probably have nothing in common that are having some of the most fascinating talks that you'd ever heard, you know, whether it's about costuming or, you know, a debate on the different captains in Star Trek or whatever it is, it's all out there. And it's, I tell people all the time who've never been, it's the best people watching that you'll ever do. You know, it's amazing. And I don't know of a type of fandom that you don't find somewhere at DragonCon, whether it's official or unofficial. You know, we don't have a Deadpool specific fandom, but you're going to probably see 50 or 100 or 200 Deadpools walking around DragonCon. And I know nothing about Deadpool except that that's a name that gets tossed around a lot. But yeah, it's out there, and you know, you're going to find it at DragonCon. And I just try to make sure that Space Track covers as much as we can. We're talking commercial space like we always do. In the inner solar system, the outer solar system, the universe itself, you know, launches of all different types. We try and cover it. As my motto on my, you know, my website is, we bring the universe to you. And we try to bring that to the people at DragonCon.
Cool. Well, and we appreciate you doing all this work, getting all this put together for all the space nerds out there. So it's
One more cute little story, if you have a moment.
Sure.
I have, like all tracks do, I have a large group of regulars. You know, they come for Space Track. They do other things at Dragon Con, of course, but they literally come for Space Track. And about a month ago, I got an email from one of these regulars telling me that she's undergone, you know, some immunotherapy or whatever. Her immune system is shot right now. She can't leave the house. And she was devastated that she was not going to be able to get to Space Track this year.
Mm.
And she asked if there was any way to stream it. And I was like, you know, if I had, you know, the setup that Skeptics has, right, I might be able to do something like that. But no, you know, I do the audio. And I told her that I would take a copy of all of our audio and I would put it on a flash drive and I would send it to her. And she was ecstatic, just to know that she would at least be able to hear it if she didn't get to see it. And that just touched me very deeply. It's, you know, I have a lot of people who always say, oh, you know, thank you, we love this track, you know, it's our favorite thing or whatever. But you hear that during the convention, you know, and I have my Facebook page with a lot of my regulars there, but to have somebody contact me and say, I so don't want to miss this, you know, and I know who she is and, you know, I recognize her, she's always there, that, you know, I so don't want to miss this, that could you please in some way or another, let me know what's going on. So.
Okay. It is a special kind of community we have built here at DragonCon.
So, very much so.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, we always like to play a little game with our guests. This year we've been going through old trivia games and games that I found over the years or whatever that are really, really horrible.
This one isn't as bad. It's not set up so I lose.
That's why it's not so bad for her. That's why she thinks it is. But anyway,
it is actually really bad.
Yes, they're horrible questions, but I've picked out a couple and shuffled them together here for us. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a choice of two topics from the cards, and then you will pick one and we'll ask you the four questions, that are on there. And after three cards, we'll tally up the scores between you and Lee. So, Rain, to start, you have your choice of classic Star Trek or Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Classic.
Okay. And you'll see how easy these questions are in just a second. And this one is one of the ones that wasn't even cut right. So anyway, what's Spock's farewell catchphrase?
Live long and prosper.
That is correct. What?
I even did the little thing with my hand as I said that.
Did you really? What's the term for when?
So did I, actually, as you were saying it. I was like, oh, yeah, I can do that. I can do it on both hands. Yay!
So can I.
What's the term for when the Enterprise bends space to exceed the speed of light?
Warp. Warp drive.
Yeah. How many years did the original series run? 3, 5, 6, or 7?
3.
What was Dr. Bones McCoy's first name?
What in the world is with you with the boinking?
I don't know.
Oh, my
What was Bones?
Leonard.
That's right. Leonard. You got 4 points. Good job. All right, Lee, you get the choice between Deep Space Nine and Star Trek The Next Generation.
I actually will go Deep Space Nine because I just rewatched that with my son recently.
Oh, did you? I honestly think it's the best of all of them. But anyway.
I think it is absolutely the best, and it is the best writing of all of them.
What is Deep Space Nine or DS9?
It's a space station.
Correct.
It's a space station above a planet.
Yeah, you got it right. And above a wormhole. It's above a wormhole, isn't it?
Okay.
It's also guardian of a wormhole.
Yeah.
They don't know that when they start. Not until Cisco gets her.
I just may have spoiled the next one.
I'm sorry.
No. I said it too. So what cosmological oddity is found near where DS9 is stationed?
She just said it. That's the wormhole.
Wormhole, right.
But I did know it already. So.
In season 4, which feisty Klingon crossed over from Star Trek The Next Generation?
Worf.
That's right. And this is probably the hardest of the questions, which is not hard at all. Name the evil alien nemesis from the Gamma Quadrant that hails from the other side of the wormhole.
Oh, the Jem'Hadar? Or the
They got a more generic name.
The Jem'Hadar are the soldiers. Huh? Wait, John, you said something I didn't hear. I'm sorry.
I think it's more of a generic, more of a...
Okay. There was the blobby things like Odo. The Oh God, what was that called? Oh, why am I blanking on that? Hold on.
All right, I got to call time.
That's, no.
Yes. All right.
Hold on.
I'll give you one more second. He typed.
I can't remember.
The Dominion.
The Dominion. Oh, the Dominion.
That's all right, Lee. Right. I didn't remember it either. Of course, I never thought of the Dominion as a race. For some reason.
They aren't. They're actually more than there are a lot
right,
of.
Right, that's why I said you're looking for more of a generic.
Right.
Yeah.
The Jem'Hadar are and those people with the funky ears and all that. Yeah.
All right.
I know those people. Yeah.
So, Rain, Star Trek The Next Generation or Star Trek Voyager?
Oh, boy. Next Generation.
Okay. How did Star Trek The Next Generation change the intro line to boldly go where no man has gone before? What did they change about that line? To boldly go where no man has gone before.
I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think they changed man to make it more generic, and I can't remember exactly what it is.
We'll give you credit for that one, to go where no one has gone before.
One has gone before. No one, okay. Yes. I knew it was
and
something.
And you know
to do with
how many fanboys got so upset about that? Oh, my Lord.
Oh, all the same ones who are upset about a female Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. Dry your tears. I'm making a martini.
Who's the captain of the Next Generation Enterprise?
Picard.
That's right.
Making a comeback, apparently.
Yes, apparently. What's a sinister, hive-minded cyber race that battles the Federation in Star Trek The Next Generation?
The Borg.
That's correct. What three-word catchphrase does the Borg use when it's trying to assimilate a life form?
Three-word?
Yeah, what's
three
the...
Three-word?
Yes. Three-word catchphrase.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is it. You're thinking of the second part of... There's two sentences to that.
It's... All I can think of is, we will assimilate you, but that's not three words.
No. Resistance...
Can I say it? I want to say if
resistance
I got it
right. Resistance is futile.
Oh, you got it in. She got it in there.
Resistance is futile.
Okay.
Lee, Star Trek
Voyager.
Lee, Star Trek Voyager or Star Trek The Next Generation?
Oh, Next Gen.
Okay.
Please God.
All right. What's the name of the Enterprise's android lieutenant commander?
Oh, that would be Data.
Mm-hmm. Who was a celebrity bartender on the series?
Whoopi Goldberg.
Who played the Klingon security chief Worf?
Michael.
Halfway there.
See him. Michael. He's come to Dragon Con. Michael.
You might live
in
one of these.
Okay, I want to come back to it.
Okay.
Can I come back to it?
What was Captain Picard called? What did Captain Picard call Commander Riker?
Number one.
That is correct. Now, you have the other answer?
Can I jump in?
Hint?
It, go to the early part of the alphabet.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
You've gone by it.
Too far.
A, B, C, Michael.
Stop.
A, B, 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 B.
C, no. D, D.
D.
D. Michael Dorn!
Michael Dorn.
There you go.
All right, there you go. All right, I'll give you credit. All right, last card.
Thank you for the hint.
Last card for you, Rain. Star Trek Voyager or Star Trek Enterprise?
Voyager, because I never watched Enterprise.
You and everybody else did not. Who is a captain? Who is the captain of the USS Voyager?
Janeway.
That is correct. Jeri Ryan played this sexy. They wrote this, not me. This sexy part Borg drone who reluctantly joins the Voyager crew.
7 of 9.
Correct. What quadrant of space does Voyager occupy for most of the series?
Delta quadrant.
That is correct. What is the race? What is the race of Commander Tuvok?
Vulcan.
That is correct.
Wow, I can't believe you made those so easy. Thank you.
Well, I didn't. These people thought it would be difficult.
I'm hoping the Enterprise ones are that easy too.
Right, because that is what you get.
I watched all of first season, and then I was like, yeah, I'm gonna just watch the ones that Tucker is neat in. So then I cherry picked the rest after it was over.
Well, this is the one you get. So here we go. What actor captained the ship in this prequel to the original series? Who is the captain in the series?
Okay, Scott Bakula. That one I do know.
That's correct. The series had a different title for the first 2 years. What was it? It wasn't Star Trek Enterprise. It was
just Enterprise.
That's correct. Name the sexy Vulcan science... Again, with the sexy. Name the sexy Vulcan science officer played by Jolene Blaylock.
T'Pol.
Correct.
T-P-O-L.
I wouldn't have gotten that one.
Apostrophe P-O-L. Yeah, T'Pol.
Which aliens...
I only watched the Tucker episode. There was a lot of T'Pol and Tucker.
Okay.
All right. PG, please.
Yes, they put a romance in place with it. Yes, they did.
Which aliens are intent on destroying humanity with their planet-destroying weapon?
The Zindi.
That is correct. You got all four.
I do not know how I just pulled that out of my butt because I couldn't think of it, and then all of a sudden it just popped out as soon as
it was right there.
Awesome.
Very good.
All right. Well, you did win. You did win, Rain. Lee missed one question at the very beginning.
What was the one I couldn't remember? The Dominion. Yeah.
The Dominion. Yeah. It was. Whatever. All right. Rain.
We both did very well.
We did, and great. In all honesty, I'm probably. I mean, I remember Star Trek original when it first came on. So.
Yeah.
As I give away my age here.
I wish I did. I would have loved to.
Before we go, let everyone know again where you're located, where the Science Track is main room is.
Main room is the second floor of the Hilton, room 212 and 213. Come off of the Habit Trail and go immediately to your left.
Okay, cool. And is there anywhere on the webs or whatever that they can get more information on your track?
I have the schedule on the link from DragonCon to Space Track.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Facebook, DragonCon Space Track. And we just have lots of general discussion there. But at the top of the page, I guess they've just changed them now to something called announcements or whatever. But my track is right there as well. And it's on the app now.
Yes, on the app too.
Yes,
I had to talk to 5 people to figure out how to find the track information. It was like every time I touched something, there was no track information. I didn't know about the filtering. I do now, though.
Well, there you go. All right. So until next time, again, thank you. Thank you for joining us, Rain. We really, 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 really appreciate it.
We do. Thank you doing it. Yay, science.
Space science.
Well, it's science and space. I mean, you can only get to space if you know science.
That's true. And that,
so that's
that
why
I was
saying yay science, not yay space.
Or a big rubber band.
The
if
science
I'm to,
behind the space.
If I'm to believe Bugs Bunny, a big rubber band will work as well. Those are the two things you need, either science or rubber bands. So until next time. For Rain and Lee, this is John saying peace.
Thank you.
Live long and prosper. Bye.
This has been a production of The Unique Geek. To leave a comment or suggestion, call us at 833-210-TUG or email us at thegeeks@theuniquegeek.com. Follow The Geeks on Twitter. @sign, The Unique Geek. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike non-commercial license.